Blog Talk Radio.
Wow. It is December 8th, Tuesday. This is Chef Stuarto. And thank you, everybody, for listening today and coming into this day with me. Some people have been thinking about their day at this point in time, and I always try to make it possible to have a little bit of a break with everybody. So, therefore, we have the possibility of having a little bit of time. Take it easy, as they say. And that's what we're going to do today. Today is a very, very special day. And a lot of places around the country are feeling the same thing. It's the ninth plus month of the pandemic that we're all dealing with on a daily basis. And things seem to be getting a little bit more difficult as the days go by, just with the explosion of cases that are happening in every state pretty much in the United States. We're broadcasting from the Pacific Northwest, and many other places in the country, Washington State is kind of exploding a little bit with more and more cases every day. So therefore, we're all in that lockdown mode again. We're in that quarantine mania frame of mind, and wanted to first of all thank everybody for listening to this show on a regular basis. I'm just overwhelmed by the positivity and the feedback with everybody, and I appreciate it more than you know. And I love the notes and things that have been saying about their appreciation of food on the radio, which is it's interesting because I try to cook in real time and give all your listeners some ideas and suggestions on how to cook certain things and how to just make your day a little bit better, which is done through food, of course, and in most cases, hopefully being able to communicate with people you love and in your household, taking care of each other. And if you're, stretching this thing out by yourself, then I've tried to provide a little bit of company on certain days that might make your day a little bit more, happier, less lonely. We're all going through it. And today, being a special day, December 8th, 2020, exactly 40 years ago today, would be 40 official years in about 6 or 7 hours, we lost one of the greatest influences in most people's lives, not only our generation, but the generations after us, our kids and our grandkids, even our grandparents, have been touched in one way by John Lennon. And I dedicated this show today to him. And let's just listen to a little bit of John for a minute, and then I'll be back in a sec. Thank you.
love is real. Real is love. Love is feeling. Feeling love. Love is wanting to be loved. Love is touch. Touch is love. Love is reaching, reaching love. Love is asking to be loved. Love is you. You and me, love is your wind. We can be love is free. Free is love.
All right, what a beautiful song. A good way to make this day work. John was an incredible influence on all of us on so many levels, and I wanted to talk about the musical influences that he's had on me. I was always, musical in my life, which is amazing. I just had a feel for it at a really young age. And I think I got my first somewhat of a guitar in my hands when I was about 6 or 7 years old. It was on the steps of a two-story Brooklyn, Brownsville, New York flat. And there was a neighbor of ours, his name was Alan Weinstein. And I think the last time I saw him, let's see, it must have been about 60 plus years ago. I'm not going to reveal my true age, even though it's 70. But anyway, I remember it was kind of twofold. The first time I'd ever really held a little guitar, and I remember just kind of holding it and plunking some strings, and all of a sudden I said, can you make music? Now, I had a piano in my house, but at this point I still hadn't really taken the first piano lesson. But for some reason, that initiation of that guitar in my hands made me decide when I went back to my house across the street, I remember sitting at the piano and starting to plink some things out. Now, at this point in time, the guitar was basically, living and resting over there. So I didn't really have it in my hands. But I started playing piano and started clinking it, and my mom decided to maybe we'll get some lessons. I said, okay. So the first lessons, we marched downtown Brooklyn, I remember, and we went into this old building and went up a couple of rackety flights of stairs to a room that looked like, it was interesting, it was a long hallway, and there was about 6 or 7 doors, and in each door there was a little teeny room with a piano. And evidently that's the piano school. And I remember the teacher coming out and looking at him and thinking, is this a rabbi or is this a teacher? He had a long gray beard, and kind of serious face. And I remember him smoking. I remember that. And mom said, okay, I'll pick you up in a half hour or whatever it was. And he escorted me to one of these little rooms. And it was so small, but the smoke, he kept smoking. And anyway, I was used to that because everybody in my family was a smoker at that point in time. Anyway, to make a long story short, we started our lessons, and he was kind of excited. I played a few things, and he taught me a couple little basic notes, and that was that. And going back home, and a week later came back, and he wasn't there. Instead, there was this woman. Her name was Mrs. Schatzberg. Mrs. Schatzberg was kind of cool, and she gave me another little bit of a lesson. She didn't say much and just kind of observed, didn't really challenge me or ask me many questions. And then that was it for that week. The next week, my mom said, look, I have some news. We're not going to go downtown for your piano lesson today. Mrs. Schatzberg is coming over, and she's going to do it at our house. Now, the piano we had, I have no idea if it was in tune or it's been there forever. It was a Wurlitzer spinet piano. And the thing that was interesting about it, it had about 200 picture frames on the top of it, all my mom's pictures, kids and the family. And she had to remove some half of these frames just to get the lid open on the piano so we could do a lesson. And, of course, as soon as you touched a note, one or two of the frames would slide onto the keys. And so finally we got it straightened out. And Mrs. Schatzberg came. Now, at this point in time, they had given me a little exercise to do, a couple of little notes. But honestly, I couldn't really read the notes. I did it by ear. And for some reason, I was blessed to have an ear. And I know a lot of great musicians, and a lot of them just have a natural ear. And I also know musicians that without sheet music and charts, they're lost. I mean, they can't play with somebody else unless they have a general sheet in front of them. But I was one of those people who could do it, though I didn't excel enough in the reading part. And to this day, as a musician and play a lot of different instruments, I still really can't read music. I mean, I can read it, but not at the pace of the song. Like if you gave me a half hour to kind of go through a 3-minute song, I could do that. Anyway, I remember she said, okay, Stuart, I'll play this little piece. So I looked at her, and very easily I took my fingers and, you couldn't use two pinkies. You had to use the whole hand, and each note, each finger had to go to a specific note. It's an exercise. At the time, I didn't realize that. So I went ahead and plunked out whatever this tune was. I can't really remember what it was. Let's say Row, Row, Row Your Boat or something like that. And she looked at me. She goes, that was very good. And she took my hand and she pounded it into the keys, I kid you not, and said, that was very good, Stuart, except you played it in C and it was written in G. So anyway, I couldn't get away with it. I was so confident, like I was making believe I was reading the music. Anyway, to make a long story short, that was my early influence of notation and things like that. And the next thing happened a couple of years later when I was about 12 and a half years old. I ended up getting a hernia, and I had to go to the hospital to have an operation. And in those days, you're sharing a room with somebody, and I was pretty young and scared and didn't know what to expect. And I remember in the recovery part of it after, the operation, was laying there and just trying to realize it was hurting. I couldn't laugh. I remember that. Any kind of laugh would just hit you right down there in the good old groin, and next thing you know, you'd be in pain. But I remember there was a guy next to me. His name was Marty. And from what I understand, he was a bank teller, an elderly gentleman. And in the old days, they used to give things away in banks. They'd give, butter away or eggs or scales or such and such, if you open an account. And I guess they were giving bathroom scales out, those old little, heavy-duty little iron metal bathroom scales that they had in the old days. And he was pulling one down, I guess, for a patron of the bank, and it came out of the box and fell right on his toe full force and pretty much severed his toe. So he was in the hospital recovering from the toe. And I won't tell you the gory details of the fact that they were exercising or trying to look at it and the toe came off in the nurse's hand. But that's another story. We'll do that on the Foodomania Horror Show next Halloween or something. But anyway, the thing that really loved, he said, he was trying to make conversation with me because I was really nervous and he'd say, what do you like? I said, well, I play piano and I really want to play guitar. And he says, have you ever played drums? You know anything about drums? And I said, no, not really. I said, I remember, I used to see drums when I used to go to these affairs, bar mitzvahs, weddings. And he goes, well, I'm going to give you something, Stuarto. And the next day, his wife brought this little, sort of alligator kind of box with a couple of clips on it, and it ended up being an old army snare drum and a set of sticks. And that was the beginning of my drumming phase. Anyway, let's put it this way. I started to play. I decided I was going to be a drummer. I still tinkered around on the piano. And by this time, another cousin of mine actually gave me a little, what they call these days, a parlor guitar, a little harmony six-string guitar, a little wooden guitar, and I had that. Didn't know if it was in tune. So I was kind of plugging around. But I didn't have drums. I started what they called a garage band. So what I would be able to do is borrow my next-door neighbor's drums. He was a band leader, and I'd be able to get a snare drum and a bass drum and a cymbal, and I'd be able to go to somebody else's house and practice. We couldn't practice in my house because my grandmother was an elderly lady, and she just didn't like the noise. Anyway, one thing led to another, and I had one of my first little bands, and the kind of songs we did really were instrumentals like Pipeline and Wipeout, but we also played Beach Boys songs, and I remember how great that was. I also remember that the couple of weeks into November, I was still a Cub Scout or a Boy Scout, and we went to one of these field trips to a submarine base in New London, Connecticut. And part of the day was that we were able to go into the commissary, you know, and actually have a sandwich or a hamburger or whatever, where all the sailors were. It was pretty cool. But I remember they had a jukebox. I remember walking over to the jukebox and seeing this interesting picture of these four guys kind of faced different ways, and they had these round neck kind of shark skin style suits, and they were called the Beatles. And there was a song, a title on it saying, "I Want to Hold Your Hand." And I remember somehow we were able to get somebody to put it on, and I heard the sound, and I never heard anything like it before. It just did something to me. I can't really tell you what it was, because I saw the picture of these guys, but I couldn't really imagine what they were like. Did they play? Did they just sing? They didn't have any instruments. Well, of course, about 5 weeks later, the Beatles came to America, and of course, the Ed Sullivan Show was completely changed everybody. And my eyes, when I saw the Beatles get on that, you know, Ed Sullivan introduced and get him to say it, I saw these four guys, and my immediate feeling, for some reason, just went right to John Lennon. It was incredible. Anyway, that's how it began for me with my relationship with John. And since those days, I've never stopped, really loving the guy and listening to his music. Every single record, every single song that him, Paul, and George and Ringo did was an influence in some part of my life. I can listen to any Beatles song and tell you kind of where I was when I heard it the first time and how it really became the soundtrack of everybody's life. And then, of course, all the other groups. But John always stood out. It was a really, really incredible relationship that I had with this man. And luckily, and incredibly enough, I was in the same airspace as him a few times. Actually, four different times. The first time was at Forest Hills Tennis Stadium in New York. Went to a concert of the Beatles. The next two times were both Shea Stadium concerts, which were, you know, record-breaking historic events. And then the final time was at one point in time, right before the Beatles, actually, the last year and a half, they came. John and Paul made a trip to New York to announce the formation of Apple Records. And we went to the airport. My sister was still probably a bigger fan than I am. And we got driven there, and we were able to go there. Our parents waited in the car amongst hundreds and hundreds of other kids. And we said, okay, I don't know, we had this instinct to go like down to the baggage area or some other place. Everybody was up on the panorama deck. We went a different way, and we ended up in this place where actually we heard screaming and lots of sound, and that was coming from outside. But we saw John and Paul walk down the plank, you know, the stairway of the plane, and actually straight ahead into this baggage customs area. And we were right there, and we actually waved to them. And I kid you not, John Lennon waved at us. He did. And that was my John Lennon story. That was the four times I ever were in the same breathing and airspace with him. But I always felt like, even in the years of playing music, it was just a great influence, the way he sang, the way he played music. And it was a tragedy the day that we lost him. And I remember, for me, I was driving across the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco after work. It was about almost 7:30 or something at night, 6:30 or something like that. I remember it. And I remember halfway across the bridge listening to the radio, and I heard something that said something John Lennon. We have an emergency announcement that Beatle John Lennon has been shot and has died. And I literally, it didn't really hit me right away, but I said, no, I couldn't believe it. And eventually I got over the bridge, and there was a turnout area where I pulled off and tried to listen, tried to hear, just go through the stations. And then every station, pretty much they were announcing this. That was a sad day. 40 years ago today, and in a few more hours would be exactly 40 years. Strangely enough and sadly enough, John was only 40 years and 2 months old the day he passed away. So his whole lifetime, and double it, and that's where he would have been today. He was born on October 9th, 1940 in Liverpool. He was, orphaned at a young age. He lost his mom, and his dad really left home when he was really, really young. He was a songwriter, a singer, a peace activist. He gained worldwide fame as the co-founder of the most amazing band in the world, the Beatles. And his partnership with Paul was totally happenstance and accidental. But created the most amazing music, and still to this day, created two beautiful children who have continued to carry his legacy on so many levels. Was married to Cynthia Lennon, who we've lost a few years ago, and then Yoko Ono, who is, stood by him through thick and thin, loved him tremendously, unfathomably, and of course, was right a couple of feet away from him when he was shot. So sadness always, but the point is that nobody I can think of has left the biggest soundtrack and legacy of music than John. He, he gave us so much, and it continues to. That's why today I wanted to dedicate the show to him. So I'm bringing on a good friend of mine. He is my partner in crime. There I go. I've just dialed him in. He'll be answering any second. And he's just somebody who, grew up with
Hello.
Me. And hey, Mr. Kenny, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, hang on 1 second. I'm just introducing you.
Yeah.
Kenny and I grew up together, and we've known each other since we were youngsters, and always had both had the same simultaneous dream. And I would say that if you wanted to put two young kids together that had the same dream, it would be Mr. Ken Fink, incredible record producer and artist, who is on the phone with me right now, and me. And we were able to spend some of the greatest years together dreaming of being a Beatle and doing everything we could to continue music and to learn how to play and do all these things. And I'm so happy to have him on the line today. Kenny, thank you, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my.
Would you care for
greatest,
a slice off the rear?
Oh, yeah, that sounds perfect. Hey, so do you remember, let's ask you two questions. And unfortunately,
yes.
I really thought, earlier I would do the first part of the show for a half hour and then do the second half hour as I normally do later. And there's a possibility, depending on what happens in the next few minutes, we may take a break and we may come back on the air. But for the moment, we'll just keep going as long as we can. And so tell me, where were you the first time that you ever heard of the Beatles?
First time I heard of the Beatles, it might have been at a band rehearsal.
Yeah, you were already in a band at that point?
Oh, yeah. I was in my first band probably in junior high school. So that's probably around 64 or so. 63,
wow.
Somewhere is in there.
Right. Yeah, so it probably would have been 63 or very early 64. So was it the Ed Sullivan Show where you saw him the first time, or did you hear anything about him beforehand?
Well, I had heard their music already before Ed Sullivan, but I was definitely one of the millions plastered to the TV screen to see that show, as well as the fact that I lived all of what, 5 miles, if that, from the airport where they came in. And, you know, it's through the back door to the airport. So it was pretty mobbed. And back then, there was so much less security or anything like that. Anybody could have just walked in.
Right. So you were there, too. Incredible.
I didn't go to the airport.
Right. But you were there in spirit. You knew that they were going to arrive.
Yeah, I was 10 blocks away watching them from the airport, watching them on TV when they were
on
Ed Sullivan.
Right. So did you, when you saw them on Ed Sullivan the first time, of course, being overwhelmed, there was a band actually playing music. Did you focus on any specific Beatle during that?
I focused on
You were
on
a guitar player
four.
At that point in time.
Yeah, and George was my first. Yeah, he was my first interest, typically because he played what solos they had and always put the little points of interest in it. So it kind of intrigued my guitar player's ear. I don't know. I was very likely focused. It was such an overwhelming experience. I remember telling a friend of mine once when I first met him and we were talking about influences. I said, you know, when I first heard the Beatles, I couldn't figure out how anyone could play their songs because I couldn't figure out how there were parts. It was just magic that kind of happened when these guys were there. It took a long time until I could really say, oh, okay, I see what he's doing. He's strumming this, or, you know, he's striking it this way, or I see he's putting in a fill over there. Okay, you know, until I started doing that, it took me a while because I was too overwhelmed with how seamlessly their parts integrated.
Right.
That's
to me.
Okay. Yeah, that to me is. I'm sorry.
Like everything just blended together, like in such a great way.
Yeah, it just made the magic of this song. It wasn't pieces. It wasn't the individual things that people were doing. It was this moment of magic that you were just captured in listening to them. It took until later when I could get my hands on their records and sit around and play them over and over so that I could isolate the part.
Wow.
You know, we all broke our record players and destroyed our records. A dime, a nickel, a quarter.
Absolutely. All right. Now, listen, here's what we're going to do.
Yes.
Hold that thought.
Yes.
I'm going to just announce to our audience that what we're going to do is we're going to sign off in about a minute, and we are going to be back on the air within just a few minutes. So what I would do is if people are listening to the link, close down the link, you know, as soon as we go off the air, just shut down the link and then click back to, you know, Blog Talk Radio. You'll get a notification and just click on again and we'll be back on the air. So it's going to be, I would say we'll be back on the air about 2:35. And then I'll be back with my absolute brother and special guest, Mr. Ken Fink, and we'll continue it. So we've left off now at the Ed Sullivan Show. And we'll take you a little bit more forward in just a few minutes. So thanks for listening. Stand by. We'll be back on the air shortly. Ken, I will be talking to you in just a few minutes. All right. Bye-bye.
Looking forward.